War Room, Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. This is our Christmas Eve show, Tuesday, December 24th, 2019. We are from our Capitol Hill War Room and our Christmas Eve special, the I-Day curated, Impeachment Day curated show. Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, we're letting have the day off. On the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network, America's Voice.news throughout the globe, and Newsmax TV. My wingman, Raheem Kassam, Nigel Farage's sidekick, the master strategist for all things Brexit. And we've decided to do something very special today. I thought it was so powerful, the 8 or 9 hour debate that took place on impeachment day, that Raheem and I and the team in the war room, the rapid response, you know, Greg and Jack and Vish and everybody, we decided to, and Dan, decided to give a highlight reel. Raheem, you want to talk about what we're going to do today?
Look, I think for a lot of people out there, they didn't watch, wouldn't have had the time or ability to watch all, as you say, the 9, maybe even 10 hours of substance on the floor of the House on impeachment day. And, you know, there were moments of drama that we're not used to seeing in the House of Representatives, and certainly not used to seeing in as much measure as well. There were moments from both the Republicans and the
Explain
Democrats.
Explain to our people, because, you know, I watch Question Time when I can on BBC. Why the parliamentary system and our system are very different. In the parliamentary system, it's just throw down all the time. It's if you like rhetoric and if you like political combat, it's great to see. What's the difference between Commons and the House of Representatives? Because the founders did try to get it to be kind of alike, but not totally alike.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, our political systems have a lot in common, but they also have some refinements that your founders made. And while they wanted the robustness of debate in the chamber, they didn't quite want it to be as mucky and as much of a throwdown as the House of Commons chamber is. Now, in recent decades, the House of Commons chamber has become a little bit less of that. You know, they replaced one of the bars on site with a creche, with somewhere with a nursery that people can drop their kids off. We've had breastfeedings in the House of Commons chamber now.
You're saying just having a bar not open at all times has made things a little more sedate.
Oh, there were more bars, but I'm just saying they replaced one. But that has changed the dynamic. The last Speaker of the House, John Bercow, changed a lot of tradition. He stopped wearing the robes, started wearing the suits, and has kind of been, you know, quote unquote modernizing it. So you're starting to lose a little bit of the intrigue that comes out of the House of Commons chamber, but you did see a lot of it coming out in the House of Representatives on impeachment day.
Yes.
You know, these guys in the UK, and you see it in other parliaments all around the world, right? They shout at each other, scream at each other, wave the papers at each other. There have been instances where people have actually picked up the mace, which is the thing that rests on the dispatch box in the Commons chamber, which allows Parliament to sit. That's the monarchy giving her consent to the Parliament to sit. And when that mace is lifted, you're no longer able to sit. You don't quite have necessarily the same level of disruption that takes place in the House of Representatives. But you do have some strange correlations taking place, some dovetailing that's been taking place between the UK and the United States. These two countries which have really witnessed and led the fight back against the career political classes, the party of Davos, the bureaucratic establishment, the intra-agency consensus. And one of those things is applause, rounds of applause inside the chamber. You know, we're really not used to seeing that in the UK. It defies convention in one of the most heinous ways possible, but you have seen it a lot with this Brexit process. And I noticed earlier this week on impeachment day that you have begun to see it in the House of Representatives chamber as well. And the clip I would like to open with, Steve, does show that's
Let me just
stop
again. This is our Christmas Eve special, 24 December, the year of our Lord 2019. It's Tuesday here in the capital, nation's capital. This is episode 87 of War and Peace. Remember, we're going to be here every day, 7 days a week, even through the holidays, until the impeachment trial in the Senate is over. The day after, we'll do a summary show. That is War Room Impeachment. Okay, what do you got for us, Raheem? So this is iDay curated.
Yeah, this is Raheem's curation. Well, I want to start with Nancy Pelosi, and this is Nancy Pelosi both after the impeachment vote and what she said on the floor. And I want people to understand the gravity, especially of this first clip where Nancy Pelosi is making clear that her colleagues, her Democrat colleagues, should not be cheering and applauding on the floor.
The yeas are 230. The nays are 197. Present is one. Article 1 is adopted. The question is on adoption of Article 2. The question is on the adoption of Article 2. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The ayes have it. The ayes have it. As Speaker of the House, I solemnly and sadly open the debate on the impeachment of the President of the United States. If we do not act now, we would be derelict in our duty. It is tragic that the President's reckless actions make impeachment necessary. He gave us no choice. Sadly, the American people have witnessed further wrongs of the President, which necessitate the second article of impeachment, obstruction of Congress. When the President's wrongdoing was revealed, he launched an unprecedented, indiscriminate, and categorical campaign of defiance and obstruction. Never before in the history of our nation have we seen a President declare and act as if he is above the law. The President goes even so far as to say and act on this absurdity when he says, Article 2 says I can do whatever I want.
I just want to just recap on that. So you heard at the very beginning there, that was when the
article
You
started at
passed.
The end, which kind of threw me. You started because you wanted to show her, she was a little rattled when they started to applaud and started to get loud, and she had told them beforehand, not, don't do that.
They start to applaud. You hear maybe 2-3 claps, and she holds up her papers and points over to her own side and then whips the papers as in, like, cut it out. And you hear the Republicans, the oohs you hear are the Republicans going, oh, I thought this was a prayerful day. I thought this was a mournful day. I thought you weren't trying to cheer about this. I started at the end there because out of both that and because that's the way the framing that the Guardian newspaper has presented. And you know how much I like, and I know you like, Steve, to interpret how the New York Times, the Guardian, the Financial Times, all these guys are framing these things. And they're framing it as Nancy Pelosi with her iron fist in charge of her own party, in charge of the rhetoric coming out of her own party, and then being, you know, that responsible, solemn approach on the House floor.
I love it. What do you want to get to next?
Well, I want to...
By the way, she started with the solemnity, the whole thing with the... with laying out, you know, trying to embrace the Constitution, trying to embrace the Declaration of Independence, the Pledge of Allegiance, all of that.
She read the Pledge of Allegiance on the floor there. She had signage next to her of the American flag and a quote underneath it just read, to the Republic for which it stands. And this is something that
she repeated for emphasis.
Yes, she said, to the Republic for which it stands. This is something they've kept on repetition the last couple of weeks, is the Republic. The Republic. How many times now, Steve, have we heard them invoke Benjamin Franklin? A Republic, if you can keep it. I don't necessarily quite understand why that, of all things, they're going for. I wonder if you can explain. Am I not getting this as an Englishman?
No, it was because it's a landmark statement. Every film that's been done about it, you know, he walks out, talks to a woman, asks him, and says, a Republic, if you can keep it. It's just a seminal moment. That's why it was used so much during the day.
And but I always understood it to be slightly derogatory from Franklin rather than an encouragement to keep your
no,
Republic.
No, I think it was a warning. A warning.
See, I thought it was more like, you're never going to be able to keep it anyway. It's a kind of a roll eyes
comment. That's because you're a dour Englishman. We're Americans. We're optimistic, right?
I'm being too cynical about that.
Yeah, you're a glass half empty guy. We're a glass half full.
Yeah, I mean, look, over the course of this show, we're gonna play the best of clips from the iDay, from Impeachment Day itself. And, you know, what we'll get to after the break is going to be Donald Trump's reaction, President Trump's reaction from that stage. In Battle Creek, Michigan. This was an hour plus speech that he gave in Battle Creek.
Hold that maybe until we get back. We got to take a break. Tell people how you get 24 hours, even over the holidays. In fact, after that Christmas dinner, when you know you've had enough family time, at least for the day, and you want to go check some news out, how do you get there?
The tryptophan is kicking in, and maybe you're feeling like you want to listen to some dulcet tones talking about impeachment. You can go to warroom.org and get the podcast on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on SoundCloud. We're also on YouTube. You can search YouTube for us and make sure that you're obviously subscribed. We put out a daily newsletter at warroom.org as well, which is the top lines of the day. It's not one of these boring National Review emails with 70,000 words and all this legalese in it. Yeah. It's to the point. It's punchy. You're going to want to subscribe at warroom.org.
Okay, let's go sell some ads, and we're going to be back with our Christmas Eve special War Room episode 87. Back in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, impeachment. On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Tuesday, December 24th, the year of our Lord 2019. It's Christmas Eve. Episode 87, War Room Impeachment, our special Impeachment Day curated by Raheem Kassam. Let's go right to, we got so many tapes we want to play. Let's go right to President Trump.
Do worse than that. By the way, it doesn't really feel like we're being impeached. Do you? The country is doing better than ever before. We did nothing wrong.
So that's the framing. It's Nancy somber on the House floor telling her colleagues to shut the heck up when they start applauding. And then you've got President Trump.
And we're doing it for the Republic.
Yeah, exactly. President Trump, big, bolshy, undeterred in Battle Creek, Michigan last night, on the night of I-Day, rather.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to now we're going to see the political combat that took place in the well of the House.
Madam Speaker, I want to thank the gentleman for yielding. Madam Speaker, I rise with a heavy heart to support this resolution. When we came to Washington in 1961 to go on the Freedom Rides, we chose that day. When we came here on August 28, 1963, for the March on Washington, it was joyful. We met with a young president, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. When we came here on August 6, 1965, for the signing of the Voting Rights Act, we were excited, hopeful. We met with President Lyndon Johnson, but today, this day, we didn't ask for this. This is a sad day. It is not a day of joy. Our nation is founded on the principle that we do not have kings, we have presidents. And the Constitution is our compasses. When you see something that is not right, not just, not fair, you have a moral obligation to say something, to do something. Our children and their children will ask us, what did you do? What did you say? For some, this vote may be hard, but we have a mission and a mandate to be on the right side of history.
That was Congressman John Lewis. What do we got next? That teases up some high rhetoric there.
It's pretty
powerful.
Pretty powerful stuff. And, you know, especially, you know, our children will ask, what did you do? What did you say? That, I think, when you place that into context, it's a call with the Ukrainian president, a call about aid, may have been a little bit over the top for that moment, but never doubt that it was a powerful
moment.
Let's
run these as many as we can back to back to back. We'll try to identify folks afterwards.
Yeah.
President Trump doesn't want people coming here and going on welfare, and you hate him for it. President Trump wants able-bodied people on food stamps to try to work, and he's hated for it. President Trump renegotiated that rip-off trade agreement with Mexico and Canada, and it was let in place by President Bush and President Obama, and you hate him for it. President Trump sides with law enforcement instead of criminals, and murders dropped 1,000 people last year, and you hate him for siding with the police. President Trump lets Christian adoption agencies choose who they want to be parents, and you don't like him for that. President Trump won't let foreign aid go to agencies that perform abortions. You hate him for that. President Trump's judges stick to the Constitution. He's disliked for that. President Trump is keeping his campaign promises, and you hate him for that. I yield the remainder of my time.
I rise today in support of House Resolution 755. As a CIA case officer, I used to meet with foreign nationals who were providing vital intelligence to help inform our hardest national security decisions and keep our country safe. These individuals from countries where leaders abused their power and defied the rule of law risked imprisonment and often their very lives in order to provide the United States with information to help us, to inform us. But why? It was their belief in the United States, their belief in our country, the longest standing democracy in the world, our country, a beacon of hope in the world, a democratic republic founded on a document and the belief in the rule of law and a belief in its people. Today, I am proud to serve in the People's House, representing my hometown, and again serving our country, that beacon of hope in the world. And today, especially today, I reflect on the founding documents that have set us apart in the world, leading people across generations and across the world to risk everything because of their belief in our great nation. Today, especially today, I affirm my commitment to upholding and protecting the Constitution, the rule of law it defines, and the people it governs.
Gentlemen from Georgia.
And a lot of these people only had like 90 seconds, so you hear a little bit of the procedural stuff under them. Let's go to keep going and go to Louis Gohmert.
The president turning his back on Ukraine, that happened in 2009, because in 2008, Ukraine invaded Georgia. What happened? Bush put sanctions on Russia to teach them a lesson. What happened after that? Well, in March of 2009, Hillary Clinton was sent over to Russia with a reset button to say, Bush overreacted. We're okay that you invaded Georgia. It was a green light to Russia to invade Ukraine. And what do? Oh, yeah, you send blankets and MREs. They can eat and be warm while the Russians are killing them. That is what the Obama administration did. This is a travesty. And we're in big trouble because Schumer was right. Now, it's lowered even farther, the bar. It will be used for political battles, and this country's end is now in sight. I hope I don't live to see it. This is an outrage. I yield back.
Gentleman from New York.
Mr. Speaker, I am deeply concerned that any member of the House would spout Russian propaganda on the floor of the House. I now yield 1 minute to the gentleman from New York, Mr. Higgins.
The gentleman from New York is recognized for. The House will come to order. The gentleman from New York is recognized for 1 minute.
Thank you.
The House will come to order. The House will come to order. The gentleman from New York is recognized for 1 minute.
That was the biggest fracas we had during the day. That's when Nadler accused Louis Gohmert of really using talking points from the Russians.
And the imagery very powerful there as well. Louis Gohmert being very concise and very clear about what led the United States to this situation as regarded Russia, Georgia, Ukraine. You heard it all as regarded the Barack Obama administration's response to the invasion of Ukraine. And Jerry Nadler getting up immediately after and accusing Louis Gohmert, who is stating historical fact, of spouting Russian propaganda. After that, immediately after that, Louis Gohmert returns to the microphone to harangue Jerry Nadler right back.
I don't know if it's harangue. I think it's an honest thing. And then later that night, Brian Williams took a shot at it.
Deserved haranguing.
We're going to have to do some of the other clips after we get back from the break. But just give in a summary, just give everybody a quick, how do they go to the 24 hours a day, the hottest site on news, the hottest news site on the web, how do they get there?
Yeah, look, we're really pleased with everyone who's coming to the site, and we thank you for it, for your subscriptions. It's free on iTunes and everywhere else. If you subscribe and leave us a review, it makes it more likely that other people find the podcast, that other people can subscribe to the podcast. And really, you know, we're so grateful. We're already one of the top shows out there. Fast Company magazine said we're the best impeachment podcast out there. So keep going, keep sharing. We're really grateful for it.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. Episode 87, pay some bills, come back. It's Christmas Eve in Washington, D.C. War Room Impeachment will return in a moment.
Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, Christmas Eve, episode 87, here on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, americasvoice.news, and available on Apple, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud. We hope you're all consuming across your preferred platforms. And also, if you have feedback for us, we love it, at warroom.org. Make sure you're checking out the comments section. We're in there every day, 365 days a year, or however long we've been going for, at least 24 hours a day until the acquittal of President Donald J. Trump. I'm Raheem Kassam. Stephen K. Bannon has bounced for the episode. We've got Greg Manns in from the War Room to join us for the rest of the show. Greg, what we're doing here is recapping I-Day, Impeachment Day. The earlier this week, the House passed those two, what one might call weak tea articles of impeachment, the abuse of power and the obstruction of Congress, by margins pretty much along partisan lines, although you had some divergence within the Democrat Party. You had a couple of people voting for one and not the other. You obviously had Tulsi Gabbard voting present on both, which is a form of abstention, and a very interesting statement Tulsi Gabbard made. Maybe we can get to that clip later on in the show if we can. I want to just go back to the House floor. We just played Louie Gohmert and his clash with Chairman Jerry Nadler there, when Jerry Nadler accused him of Russian propaganda for stating what are simply just the facts of the matter, the facts of how we got to this Ukraine very strange impeachment crisis that involves a load of players that nobody ever heard of, nobody ever cared about, and that will never be heard from again, much like the whistleblower. I want to take it back to the House floor now and hear what some of the other representatives had to say for themselves on that dramatic impeachment day.
Before you take this historic vote today, 1 week before Christmas, I want you to keep this in mind. When Jesus was falsely accused of treason, Pontius Pilate gave Jesus the opportunity to face his accusers. During that sham trial, Pontius Pilate afforded more rights to Jesus than the Democrats have afforded this president in this process. I yield back.
The president was given the opportunity to come and testify before the Judiciary Committee, to send his counsel, to question witnesses. He declined to do so.
That was Barry Loudermilk invoking Pontius Pilate there. I want to go to Jim McGovern from the House.
Our inquiry is simply to answer the following question. Did President Trump and his top advisors corruptly withhold official government actions to obtain an improper advantage in the next election? We now know through the hard work of our investigative committees and because of the president's own admission that the answer to that question is yes. The president withheld congressionally approved military aid to Ukraine, a country under siege, not to fight corruption, but to extract a personal political favor. President Trump refused to meet with Ukraine's president in the White House until he completed this scheme. All the while, leaders in Russia, the very nation holding a large part of Ukraine hostage, the very nation that interfered with our elections, had another meeting in the Oval Office just last week. The President of the United States endangered our national security. The President undermined our democracy. And the President, a successor to the same office as George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, betrayed his oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. These aren't opinions. These are uncontested facts.
That was Jim McGovern on the House floor also. And let's dissect what we just heard, Greg. The Democrats very much going for the emotional plea. You know, they were wrapping themselves literally, as Alison Spanberger did in the Constitution. She wore a silk scarf with the Constitution on it. You heard at the top of the show what Nancy Pelosi had to say. What were your thoughts from Impeachment Day?
Well, I think you made a good point. During the evening show of Impeachment Day, talking about how the mainstream media was going to pick up Barry Loudermilk's reference to Pontius Pilate and Jesus. And they did exactly that. So to credit to you for picking up on that.
Isn't that what he wanted, though?
Exactly.
He knew what he was getting.
Yep.
And what do you, I mean, does that move the needle in any way? I mean, there are a lot of people out there who, for whom that would resonate, right?
Yeah, definitely. The people in America's heartland where the president was the night of I-Day.
People who actually own a Bible.
Exactly, yep.
There's not a lot of people on the left coast and in the Acela corridor with Bibles on their mantelpieces.
But they were referencing it a ton during their House speeches.
This is Barry Loudermilk's version of the Kanye West album, maybe, you know, bringing Jesus back into everyone's thoughts when it comes to this. And CNN don't like it. The New York Times don't like it. The Financial Times doesn't like it.
Yeah, and it was Morning Joe when the day after I-Day that it picked up on Loudermilk's reference there, and he was very...
All right, we'll bring this right back with more commentary from Greg Manns, Raheem Kassam after this break.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. It's Christmas Eve, ladies and gentlemen, December the 24th, the year of our Lord 2019. I'm Raheem Kassam with Greg Manns. We're broadcasting from the Breitbart Embassy here on Capitol Hill. It's been a very chilly Christmas time and a very frosty Christmas time as far as it has been in Congress. And we've been playing a lot of the clips that are the back and forths between congressmen on both sides, Republican and Democrat. We want to bring you all the news here. We're not just loading it up with the Republican points that were made on the House floor. I want to actually go to one of the standouts on the Democrat side, but not from the House floor, although her vote was certainly of consequence earlier this week, on the House floor. Tulsi Gabbard, one of the presidential candidates, she voted present for both of those articles of impeachment, which, you know, immediately after the vote, Nancy Pelosi kept a close hold on, said she wasn't immediately sending them to the Senate, waiting for the impeachment managers and the process. But Tulsi Gabbard had some interesting things to say about why she didn't vote with her party on this. I want to play that clip for you.
Throughout my life, whether through serving in the military or in Congress, I've always worked to do what is in the best interest of our country. Not what's best for me politically, not what's best for my political party. No, I've always put our country first. One may not always agree with my decisions, but everyone should know that I will always do what I believe to be right for the country that I love. So after doing my due diligence in reviewing the 658-page impeachment report, I came to the conclusion that I could not in good conscience vote either yes or no. I am standing in the center and decided to vote present. I could not in good conscience vote against impeachment because I believe President Trump is guilty of wrongdoing. I also could not in good conscience vote for impeachment because removal of a sitting president must not be the culmination of a partisan process fueled by tribal animosities that have so gravely divided our country. So when I cast my vote in support of the impeachment inquiry nearly 3 months ago, I said that in order to maintain the integrity of this solemn undertaking, it must not be a partisan endeavor. Tragically, that's what it has been. On the one side, the president's defenders are insisting that he has done nothing wrong. They agree with this absurd proclamation that his conduct was, quote unquote, perfect. They've abdicated their responsibility to exercise legitimate oversight and are instead blindly doing the bidding of their party's leader. On the other side, the president's opponents insist that if we do not impeach, our country will collapse into dictatorship. All but explicitly, they accuse him of treason. This extreme rhetoric was never conducive to an impartial fact-finding process. Now, the founders of our country made very clear their concerns about impeachment being a purely partisan exercise. In the Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton warned against any impeachment that would merely, quote, connect itself with the pre-existing factions and enlist all their animosities, partialities, influence, and interest on one side or on the other. In such cases, he said, there will always be the greatest danger that the decision will be regulated more by the comparative strength of parties than by the real demonstrations of innocence or guilt. Donald Trump has violated the public trust. Congress must be unequivocal in denouncing the president's misconduct and stand up for the American people and our democracy. To this end, I've introduced a censure resolution that will send a strong message to this president and future presidents that their abuses of power will not go unchecked, while leaving the question of removing Trump from office to the voters to decide. I'm confident that the American people will decide to deliver a resounding rebuke of President Trump's innumerable improprieties and abuses, and they will express that judgment at the ballot box. That's the way real and lasting change has always occurred in this great country, through the forcefully expressed will of the people. A house divided cannot stand. Today, we are divided. Fragmentation and polarity are ripping our country apart. This breaks my heart and breaks the hearts of all patriotic Americans, whether we are Democrats, Republicans, or independents. So today, I come before you to make a stand for the center, to appeal to all of you to bridge our differences and stand up for the American people. My vote today is a vote for much-needed reconciliation and hope that together we can heal our country. Let's work side by side, seeking common ground to usher in a bright future for the American people and our country.
It's really nice, Tulsi, but I don't think that that's what the two sides want, even the bases want right now. Greg, you know, it's true. A lot of what she said is true about it being a partisan process, basically on both sides. If you disregard the one or two that voted for one of the and not the other of the articles of impeachment. But what audience is she playing to out there? Because here's the way I see it: the left, the Democrats, even their voter base, their base, they want to throw down, right, the next election. And the Republicans are charged up more than ever. You saw it in Battle Creek. You saw it when Trump gave that rally on the night of impeachment. They want to throw down as well. Who's voting for this? I'm going to stand in the center. Please vote for me.
So I'm not sure if she's playing to a certain voter. I think she was playing towards the best interests of her presidential campaign. She's generating a ton of earned media out of this, and she's not running for re-election in Hawaii.
What's the use of earned media if it's an earned media that isn't appealing to anyone?
I think it's just the fact that she's trying to get her campaign from month to month to pay the bills so that she can get to the convention and see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, there was some talk about her shaking hands with a Republican on the floor of the House when she voted present on that fateful impeachment day and then leaving. I mean, I thought it was important to play that whole clip because it very much shows you where, at least as far as I'm concerned, where we're definitely not, and we're definitely not at a place where I think a Tulsi Gabbard can cut through the middle of the Republican and Democrat parties and become president. She's not going to find any support in her own party, in the Democrat Party, for this, Greg.
No, I don't think so. The AOCs, the Rashida Tlaibs, are the ones controlling the Democrat Party, and the Tulsi Gabbards are not anymore.
We'll be right back with more on War Room Impeachment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. Raheem Kassam, Greg Manns, Jason Miller, and Stephen K. Bannon taking a break here on Christmas Eve. Want to go back to the House floor. Democrat Representative Joe Kennedy.
Dear Ellie and James, this is a moment that you will read about in your history books. Today, I will vote to impeach the President of the United States, and I want you to know why. He broke our laws. He threatened our security. He abused the highest, most sacred office in our land. I want you to know that it does not feel good. I can't stop thinking about the cost to our country. Not just the impeachable offenses, but the collateral damage of a president who uses power like a weapon against his own people, erodes our decency, degrades our dignity. I don't yet know how they will tell the story of this era, but I want to tell you the story of this day. Let the record show that today, justice won, that we did our job, that we kept our word, that we stood our sacred ground. Let the record show that we did not let you down. I love you. Listen to Mom.
Gentlemen's time has expired.
It concerns every one of us. Nothing but a drive-by hit. But you know something? This majority leader also just said, wherever law ends, tyranny begins. But I will say this, in this house, wherever the rules are disregarded, chaos and mob rule actually begin, and the majority has taken that to a new level. It has been said today, where is bravery? I'll tell you where bravery is found and courage is found. It's found in this minority who has lived through the last year of nothing but rules being broken, people being put down, questions not being answered, and this majority say, be damned with anything else. We're going to impeach and do whatever we want to do. Why? Because we won an election. I guarantee you, one day you'll be back in the minority, and it ain't going to be that fun. Because when you look at it, when you actually trash the rules of this house, you ought to really look at what did you gain at the end by trashing the institution you claim to love. That's the things we found out so far. But you know, they're really careful of saying, oh, you want to deal in process and process. As I said last night in the Rules Committee, where they didn't want to listen, I'll win on process and I will win on facts because we have the truth on our side. Let me remind you,
Joe Kennedy and Doug Collins there on the House floor. That's been our wrap for the impeachment special, the I-Day special here on Christmas Eve, episode 87. It has been Greg Mann, Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam here on Capitol Hill, wishing you a Merry Christmas indeed. Over the course of the next 24 hours or so, we'll be back with another episode tomorrow. There is War Room Impeachment, episode 88 on Christmas Day, and we want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. Make sure you have some good, friendly banter with your family, as well as discussing the political issues of the day. Check out warroom.org and make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Thank you.
Sinatra was swinging, all the junk we were singing, we kissed on the corner.